What's up, White Sox fans? Welcome to the inaugural episode of The Big Blurt, starring me. I am Rob Coletti. Some people call me Bobby. It depends. I don't care. Whatever you want to call me, you call me that. Just don't call me late for dinner. And I am joined by my co-host extraordinaire, the one, the only, the incredibly handsome, William Bill Meinke, a.k.a. Billard Meinkler Doodle Dandy.
Wow.
Hi, Mel. How you doing, buddy?
Hi, that's the best intro anybody's ever given me ever, I think, in the history of time.
Thank you, Bill. For those of you who don't know, Billy and I are old friends. We have known each other for many, many years, went to college together way back in a year I won't say for the purposes of protecting my age to the public. But Bill and I met in psychology class at Columbia College in Chicago, where we were students together and bonded over our love for the White Sox. And ever since, we have been chumliest best pals, honoring our co-shared and founded love for the best baseball team in the United States of America and the entire world, the Chicago White Sox. The good guys wear black. Right, Bill?
Absolutely, that they do. And I don't know if I ever told you this. I was thinking about trying out for the club team at Columbia, the Columbia Renegades. Did I ever tell you that? I know. I batted a solid 300 in high school, Park District League, but.
Stop bragging. All right, listen, everybody. In our first episode, we're just going to keep it relatively short, but we do have a few housekeeping things to get to eventually. First, we thought we would just tell you a little bit about ourselves. Bill, why don't you introduce our new fans to who you are?
Hey, thanks, Rob. So I'm Bill, obviously, from Des Plaines, Illinois, the beautiful, beautiful Des Plaines, Illinois, city of destiny. I reigns from Des Plaines.
The reign from Des Plaines, Billard Meinke Doodle Dandy.
That's right. That's right. So I, I'm from Des Plaines, and I love the White Sox. My parents are big White Sox fans. It's such a bonding thing with my family. It's very cool. I love baseball, played it up growing my whole life. And you know what? I'm ready for a championship. The White Sox were the worst AL team this last decade. Yeah. Can you believe that?
I just saw that statistic released this week. We had the worst record of any American League team over the last 10 years. Unbelievable. Yeah, we're ready. It's time. It's overdue. So Billy is the reigns from Des Plaines, my man, the storm himself. For those of you who don't know who I am not a journalist. I am an actor. And because of COVID, I have taken an opportunity to contribute to SB Nation and contribute my love to the White Sox, to the world. I am a professional actor. You may recognize me from the Book of Mormon on Broadway. You may recognize me from the School of Rock on Broadway or National Tour. You also may recognize me from the upcoming Broadway production of Almost Famous. But regardless, if you don't, no worries. You're going to get to know me now as a Sox fan. I grew up in Glen Ellyn, Illinois, Western Burbs. What up? And I grew up playing baseball, too. Played for 10 years. And I thought I was going to go to college and play ball. But I fell in love with theater in high school, and that's where my life took me instead. But
and that's how Broadway Bobby was born.
But you certainly can't take the White Sox fan out of me, no matter what my career is. Do you have a favorite White Sox memory, Bill?
Oh, I have 1,000 of them. I think one of the biggest memories was at the playoff game, the first playoff game against the Boston Red Sox in 2005.
Oh, yeah.
But it was right. It was a big poppy foul ball that actually hit my brother's shoulder and hit on my hand. It bounced out. Now that was great. But
I know will that say this. Story.
It was wonderful. I mean, big poppy, come on. I think one of the best memories I have, I was seeing a game with my little brother and my dad, September 22nd, 2005. The White Sox were two games ahead of the Indians. Joe Creedy hits two home runs, one of them being a walk-off.
Creedy.
Best feeling in the world.
My top five Sox players of all time. Joseph, one, king baby. Of third base. Great. Oh, man, that's awesome.
How about you?
You know, my favorite White Sox memory probably belongs to the day that you and I went to the White Sox-Rangers game, and we won 19-1, 19-2. It was a blowout. And Kevin Youkilis hit that three-run bomb, and they I was going crazy at the edge of the second deck, and they put me on the Jumbotron, and I started dancing provocatively, and the camera guy did this weird jittery thing to try and get me out. I stand by that as one of my proudest moments in life.
You're a star. You need the camera, baby.
I'm a Leo. Didn't you know that, Bill? Come on.
Oh, my bad.
Astrology is important.
Yeah.
Okay, listen, everybody. Now that you've gotten to know us a little bit, we're going to go ahead and get to the stuff that we're actually here to talk about. On today's episode, we're going to talk about the to-do list for this offseason. We're going to talk about the baseball prospects. Baseball America's top prospects list was just released, and the White Sox are underrepresented. We're going to talk about the international signings that have happened and that are to come. But first, we're going to talk about the offseason so far, because this is our first episode. We got to do a little catch up. As all of you know, the White Sox have already traded Dane Dunning and Avery Weems for Lance Lynn, a deal that both Bill and I are big fans of. Lance Lynn gave the White Sox a real linchpin at the front of the rotation. We also signed Adam Eaton. Billy, how do you feel about that move?
The Adam Eaton or the Lance Lynn?
Adam Eaton.
You know, I like it. I don't think – I think we would like a more solidified right fielder for years to come, like signing Springer for a six-year deal or whatever. Obviously, it's not going to happen. But
do you think that there's an argument to be made that Eaton and – Engel platooning right field is enough?
So Adam Engel has gotten better each year. The last 4 years he's been
really has. In fact, I would argue maybe better than Engel or Eaton right now.
I would say probably, yeah. I think Eaton's on the down roll and Adam Engel's on his way up. The thing about Eaton,
don't get me wrong, Eaton at the bottom of that lineup as a lefty bat is going to be a pest, but I don't think he has the same defensive capabilities that he did 5 years ago.
Not at all. I mean, Engel's what, a Gold Glove nominated outfielder, and he you know, it's
not even being a star.
I would say you have a good option in both of them to even start, and to platoon is even better. And we'll see a lot of Adam Engel throughout this whole season, the next few seasons, because I know that the White Sox organization really loves this guy, that he's a stand-up dude, and he gets better and he wants to get better. And mm-hmm. That's something I saw also in Yolmer Sanchez too. Somebody that wants to get better continuously. As far as Adam Eaton goes, didn't have an impressive 2020. Obviously we know that. But when he was traded from the Diamondbacks to the White Sox, his batting average jumped up 50 points. I mean, he was batting 300 with the White Sox. He in 2016 had a 6.6 WAR. I think everything was above four. The guy's a good ball player.
Yeah, I agreed. My concern with Eaton is that the AL Central is a lefty pitching heavy division. There are a lot of left-handed starting pitchers in this division. And I don't know that that matches up well for him. It matches up well for the rest of the team. But, you know, I think Eaton being brought in was a lot to do with leadership and giving us some much needed depth, but overall I certainly hope that it's not the end of the line in terms of looking for solutions to at least have a swing man into the outfield.
Absolutely.
The other big news this offseason was that the White Sox brought in Tony La Russa as manager, which is it's been met with some lukewarm reception. If you know the SB Nation Southside Sox branch, you recognize me from Will Allen's wonderful podcast with his dad, Lee. And I was brought on as a guest the week after that happened. And I absolutely aired my grievances about the hiring. But I will say in regards to this, you know, move from the front office, it's grown on me over time. And I will say, too, that the players showing their excitement about it is kind of all that really matters. And from my perspective, Bill, I say win. You know, prove us wrong. If the man is who you want, great. Then win. Because there's no more room for excuses. You're not in a rebuild anymore. You're not even in a retooling. This is now you are the favorites, not just in the division, but maybe the American League. There is no excuse not to win. Do you have any thoughts on the matter, Bill?
Yeah, they don't have the luxury of having a losing season with a new manager. Like if they were to get Hinch, maybe, but he's, you know, coming after a year of being suspended. and coming back and getting to know this club and working it. And La Russa, I know, has been out of the league for 10 years, right? 2011 is when he last won and he retired.
Correct.
He's 76 years old, and I don't think he wants to lose for three seasons only to sign another contract to win five seasons from now. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Exactly.
And he's a traditional manager. He's a hard guy, and I get it. And maybe you can rein it in a little bit. Maybe you can focus in on Robert and his development, because he kind of tailed off at the end of the year. And I think he'll be a big help. I do think that he will be gone after 3 years.
Even if they win. I agree. I don't see him as a long-term solution. I would imagine that this is a sort of a passing of a torch move. You and I have both speculated about Miguel Cairo's potential as our new bench coach.
Bench coach, yeah. He's got a lot of experience with the Yankees. He played on 11 or 12 different teams, 17 years in the MLB. He knows his stuff.
I think this is a very intentional move, and the more that it unfolds, the more excited about it I get. Having said that, that excitement is going to be easily turned into anger and displeasure should the Sox not do well this year. So the pressure is on. But while we're talking about managerial theories, Mr. Mikey, you had an idea that absolutely shook my world, and I am quite frankly in love with. Bill, why don't you tell the world just what it is you think is going to happen potentially, or what the White Sox should be doing with our good friend from St. Louis.
Okay, so hear me out. This is just a theory, and I think it would work, Bobby. But
I love this idea, Bill.
Okay. Yadier Molina being a free agent, and the Sox need a backup catcher right now. Mm-hmm. Does Yadi want to be a backup? I don't know. Can he be a starter? Probably. Is he still playing good ball at 38? Absolutely. He wants to sign a 2-year deal, and that's what he was asking for. A 2-year deal with the Cards. The Cards offered he and Adam Wainwright a deal, but for much less than they would have made if they had taken their option, I believe. So I don't know that they're going to go with the Cardinals. I don't think they're going to sign with the Cardinals. If they do, great. If they don't, the Sox should say, hey, we want you here for 2 years. We want you to play backup catcher. We want you to help Grandal. We want you to help our team win. We want you to help these young guys develop to be players like yourself.
Well, and I would even argue too, Bill, that, you know, Yadi doesn't need much help. Yasmani doesn't need much help. But
not at all. But I'm talking like the really young guys. He can help pitchers. He can help all those pitchers.
Quick little shout out to my little puppy Chewy, who has come into the camera over here. Say hello, everybody, to my corgi.
Number one White Sox. Chewy's the number one White Sox fan.
He is the number one White Sox fan. What I love about the move is that he would be able to, obviously, he would have to be the backup catcher, but I don't know that that would necessarily be a terrible thing. In the same way that they operated with McCann, they could swing Yasmani Grandal in and out of the DH and first base slot to give him his legs a rest, which would only prolong his career. And it would also give the White Sox essentially a second bench coach slash player to teach young Zach Collins how to be a better catcher, both defensively and offensively.
100%.
And so, relationship with Tony La Russa.
Has an awesome relationship with Tony La Russa. They love each other.
Mel, so, this idea is brilliant. The White Sox should hire you.
The White Sox should bring in Yadier Molina, backup catcher, 2 years. La Russa's there for three, right? You bring on Yadi after he's done. Hopefully he retires if he wants to at age of 40. You bring on Yadi as a bench coach. You move him up to manager once Tony La Russa's gone. Mm-hmm. I think that would be a great move. He knows the ins and outs of baseball. That dude has been playing forever, mm-hmm. forever. Mm-hmm. He knows exactly how to win. Because how many championships? He has two or three, right? The Cards too?
And, you know, you would essentially have two groomed young managers in training between Miguel Cairo and Yadier Molina. You could have your pick between the two. You know that the White Sox are essentially set up for success for at least the next 3 to 5 years. Other teams, if we do start winning, you know, big time, other teams are going to want to interview them, and we'll essentially have the say over who we let interview for their job and who we want to keep to take over for La Russa. It obviously is a great move to have somebody like him in your lineup anyway, but it covered so many more bases than just your typical free agent signing would. I mean, this is a very long-term plan too that really benefits not just the team, but specific players and future manager situations for the White Sox too, Bill. That's some brilliant thinking there, my man.
Yeah, and your point about Collins too. I mean, he's a good catcher, and he's going to be a good catcher, but I think he needs a little bit more work. I think after seeing him last year, we're going to need to throw him a few more pitches before he gets behind the plate.
He is struggling to hit major league pitchers. There's no doubt.
Yes, he is.
The other big move, aside from Tony La Russa being hired, is the signing of Mr. Liam Hendricks. And we don't have to spend much time on this, but I will just say I'm extremely excited about it. I'm glad the pocketbooks got open. I like Alex Colome, but the swing rates, the missed bat rates, they were all going in the wrong direction. And Liam Hendricks is easily the most dominant closer in baseball right now. The fact that he's going to an already excellent bullpen here in the South Side is something to be pretty excited about, wouldn't you say, Billy?
I would. I'm excited for the South Side Slider, is what they call him.
Yeah!
I saw that the other day, and I was like, that's killer, the South Side Slider. 2019 had a 180 ERA, 14 saves. Obviously, you know, you're going to want more than that, and I think he'll give us. But like 2020, this last season, 178, 25 saves. I mean, I'm really hoping that, you know, because he was with the A's before his last two seasons, obviously, had two good years. I'm really hoping that the change of clubs either pushes him farther to be better or doesn't turn on his numbers that he had. There's a lot of times pitchers will go to other teams and they'll have a rough couple seasons or a rough season before they can really, really find their groove. And I think the Sox obviously want to win now with trading Dane Dunning for Lance Lynn, who's got a 1-year deal and then an option. So I think having Liam there for 3 years gives him a little time to find his groove, but I hope he comes out of the gate throwing.
I don't think there'll be a learning curve for him. You know, he in the last two seasons has an ERA average of 1.79. He's got a K rate of 13, a walk rate of, you know, less than 2. The man is an absolute beast. I think between Ethan Katz and Tony La Russa and, you know, the fire that he has in his belly, it's just, it couldn't have been a better signing. Bringing him over Colome, who I like Colome a lot. I actually wrote about in a piece for SB Nation a couple of weeks ago how underappreciated Colome's efforts were this year. He really was one of the best closers in baseball, but you could tell that a lot of that might have to had to do with luck. And, you know, with Hendricks, you're removing luck from the equation a bit.
I will say that Colome, as far as a career goes, has had a steadier career than Hendricks. Yeah. But Hendricks is absolutely the more solid closer now.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if they signed Colome, would they still have the same chance of winning games? Probably, just because their offense has exploded in the 7, 8, 9 innings. I think they had the most runs scored for any team ever in those innings this last season. So had they signed Colome, I think we still would have had the same chance. Does this help us out with the maybe 5 games that would need to put us over any team that's the Twins that are competing against us for first place? Yeah, it could. So this is a good option.
Yeah, agreed. Also this offseason, the very sad tragic news, the loss of the great White Sox great Dick Allen. Just wanted to take a moment to give props to a controversial player who is highly underrated, one of the great White Sox of all time, and truly probably looked better in that red uniform than any other White Sox player. Just wanted to give him a quick shout out in our rundown from what's happened this offseason. But while we're on the topic of the offseason, it's time to move to another segment, which we're going to get to in just a second. But first, I want to take a moment to talk about what has been essentially a little bit of a letdown. Bringing in Lance Lynn and Adam Eaton and Tony La Russa and Liam Hendricks are all fine moves. But let's be frank. None of those names, maybe Liam Hendricks, but none of those names were sitting atop the free agent name list this year. And while it's true that I will concede the White Sox lineup is already pretty excellent, the White Sox have sort of watched the Blue Jays, the Mets, and the Padres outperform them at every turn this offseason. And the fact that that Trevor Bauer is still on the market is a little bit of a surprise to me. I actually wrote a piece. My first piece for SB Nation was based on how I thought that the White Sox should sign Trevor Bauer and trade for Anthony Santander. I still think they should trade for Santander. I am very quickly moving away from the belief that Bauer belongs in pinstripes because his offseason behavior has been really, really weird. And I just don't know that a presence like that in a clubhouse is beneficial. But Bill, do you have any thoughts watching the Padres, who essentially have six aces now, watching the Mets, who have brought in, you know, McCann to catch for DeGrom and Syndergaard and Stroman, and now they have Carrasco and Francisco Lindor too. I mean, those guys are making big moves. The Blue Jays just signed the biggest free agent on the market this year in George Springer, and they brought in Kirby Yates to be the closer. What do you have any thoughts about why the White Sox aren't making similar splashes? Does it have something to do with Jerry Reinsdorf trying to play small ball? Is it a fear, a trepidation of trying to overdo something? What are your thoughts, Bill?
You know, I think about this a lot too, and I think a lot falls on Jerry Reinsdorf because he's notorious for not wanting to spend. Everybody knows that.
Yeah,
it's not something that we really even need to get into because it's so well known. I do think they probably have gone after a few free agents and they just can't find the right deal. Because
can't offer them enough money.
They can't they can't offer enough money, or they won't offer enough money. Tell me that they can't.
You can't tell me that George Springer didn't look at this team and say, "Wow, this is a good young roster." You can't tell me that Trevor Bauer doesn't look at this team and go, "Wow, I would like to have them hitting behind me."
I'm actually really surprised you're not seeing the White Sox on the where's Trevor Bauer going to go. I'm kind of surprised because I want to think that Han is reaching out to Bauer's agent, Rachel Luba, I believe, right?
You have to believe that the Angels are the favorites right now.
Angel, yeah, he's a West Coast guy. He was born in Hollywood, right? He knows he wants to come out here, I think, but he says location's not a factor. But if your hometown was saying, hey, here's $200-something million.
I watched the entire masturbatory 16-minute video he released about wanting all the things he wants as a free agent, where he was like, I'm going to let you into the mind about what free agents want. We already knew all of that. Don't act like you're giving us some special information that we've never had access to before because you're putting it on your YouTube channel. Those are all factors that go into every free agent list dating back to the beginning of free agency.
I know. I think the one thing that the White Sox really saw that kind of hindered their talks, maybe, and this is obviously, again, a theory. I'm not saying this happened, but I think that when he said, I want to pitch every 4 days. I feel like I do better every 4 days or every four games, which is great. I'm glad he found that out. I'm glad he pitches better every four games. That means he basically wants to have a four-man rotation. The last time the White Sox did that was
– He also wants to be the manager. He wants to be his own manager.
He does.
I want it in my contract that I get to determine how often I pitch. No.
Right. And it says he wants to do
$35 million a year to be a player on this team. You'll do what we tell you when we give you the money that you want.
Right. Right.
That's how it works.
But you have in the back of our rotation right now, you have maybe Lopez at number five, but you have Cease and you have Mike Kopech. Right. So you don't want to bring in a guy that wants to pitch every four games, that those guys don't get work because they're the future. Those guys are the future. Those guys are going to be here longer than Lance Lynn, hopefully not longer than Giolito, but probably longer than Dallas too. So you want those guys to develop as much as they can. We know Cease is good, or he can be good, and he's going to work with Ethan Katz to make himself better.
To a point, I will say everybody's saying that Ethan Katz is going to be the great problem solver of all the White Sox problems. I don't foresee Ronaldo Lopez's metrics are so negative that I don't think you could bring in, you know, the greatest pitching mind in history and make him an ace overnight. This is, we have to keep our expectations real.
I don't think Lopez should be on the starting staff.
Agreed.
I think that would be a bad move.
Bullpen or free agent at this point.
Yeah.
You DFA him. If he demands to start, just DFA him.
Right.
Or trade him. well, since now that we've opened that can of worms, that brings us to what I would like to call our first recurring segment on the Big Blurt. A little segment that we have aptly named Shoulda, Woulda, Coulda, Shan't. And the reason that we're calling it this is because, as we've just discussed, Jerry Reinsdorf has a very infamous reputation of not wanting to spend money. And the White Sox fans are always, essentially, looking up at other teams who are making big free agent splashes every year to try and make their teams better. And they all have to ask themselves, gosh, shoulda, woulda, coulda, what should we have done? What could we have done? And what would we actually do? And we're going to take a quick look at some free agents really quick and just say what we think we shoulda, woulda, coulda, and what we shan't for pitchers, outfielders, DH, utility guys, and obviously how that would fit into the scheme. First, you know, I have on the shoulda list Trevor Bauer. That actually for me is changing a bit. I actually think Bauer brings more baggage than he's worth. I actually think his baggage pulls away from the value that he thinks that he's worth. And I'm a little concerned about his very mysterious rise in spin rate. I don't know that just his training method can be responsible for that. Who I do think the White Sox should have been going after is a name that I think a lot of people are overlooking. It's Taijuan Walker. His stats, his metrics actually look pretty good over the last couple of years. He made a lot of improvements. He would fit in perfectly in a four slot and would give, you know, Kopech and Cease some relief. He would give us some injury depth. We know we're going to face some kind of injury this year, and it's inevitable. It happens. He would be a great, you know, a great value purchase for the position. And I personally think if I'm Rick Hahn, I'm trying to get on the phone with his agent to say, how can we just make this deal done? Because if your rotation is Giolito, Lynn, Keuchel, and Taijuan Walker, and then your fifth slot is a toss-up between Cease and Kopech, you actually have a lot of flexibility there. Because then if Walker fails, you have Cease and Kopech. If Cease fails, you have Kopech and Walker. If Kopech fails, or if Cease fails, you have Kopech and Walker. You know what I'm saying. Those three guys essentially are a triangle. If somebody gets hurt at the front of the rotation, you have depth. You know, we have also Jonathan Stever obviously has a lot of work to do, but he projects to be high. We have a lot of depth beneath this guy who I think could come in cheap and be the guy.
I agree. I think he can be the guy. Only downside, he's only pitched in 8 years, what, 30, 35 games?
Yeah. Obviously, the injuries are a concern. But again, this is about, you know, the reason to not get Trevor Bauer is because, well, we have too much young talent on our team that is eventually going to be there. Well, Taijuan Walker doesn't block that path. He only kind of is a bridge and a solid one at that. He could
he figured
on a one-year deal and end up somewhere else next year.
He figured something out when he was traded from Seattle to Toronto. Exactly. He figured something out. His ERA dropped 3 points, and he was finished the year with the 147, 2-1, 147 ERA. He can be good.
I love stats, Bill. You know I love stats.
I'm a stat man, baby.
Stats don't
lie. I'm a stat man. You're a stat man.
God, I love you.
I think it's a good move.
Yeah, I do too. Let's talk about what the White Sox could have been doing on the pitching front. And the names we have on this list are Masahiro Tanaka and James Paxton. Now, the reason we say coulda is because they have the money. The Sox have the money to buy these guys. But would it be worth it? That's my question. How do you feel about the pair from New York being free agents still, and how would they fit in the White Sox?
I think they shouldn't go for Tanaka.
Agreed.
But I think Paxton they absolutely should go for. The big maple.
Give Paxton a one-year deal. You could. Just give him the 15 mil, whatever he wants. Just give it to him for 1 year. Buy your safety. He's a dominant strikeout lefty who comes and gives you some really nice depth and lets your youngsters grow a little bit.
I will say this. The only problem with Paxton's had a good career, and I think when he came back last year, because he dealt with a lot of back injuries and he had back surgery, I believe. Mm-hmm. So I think it was a strained flexor tendon, right? Too, in his forearm. So he had a lot of injuries and he made 5 starts and he posted an over 6 ERA, which is not good. And that was over like 20 something innings.
Oh, great.
Can he be, I don't think you should pay too much money for him because we want him to be that fourth or fifth starter in our lineup. Can he be the guy he was before? Hopefully, when he got his nickname, the Big Maple, we hope so. But I think they should do it before the Blue Jays go after him because I know they're eyeing him.
Yeah, agreed.
As of yesterday, they were looking at him.
Agreed. I would love that solution. I think the next part, the woulda, the will, what the White Sox would have done or will do is probably sign Adam Wainwright or Jake Odorizzi, neither of whom I'm particularly fond of. So I'm actually also putting them in the shant category. James Paxton for a free agent, he and Taijuan Walker are who make the most sense to me.
I will say if they bring in Yadier Molina, they should bring in Wainwright because they work well together.
You know what? And that I would agree with that because of the fact that he has the history with La Russa and Molina. I just am concerned about the age, the durability, at least if you get Paxton or Walker, they have some mileage left. With Wainwright, you really have to wonder, would he make it to July? Would he make the playoff roster?
That's a good question.
That's something that concerns me. Now, let's play a little shoulda, woulda, coulda with some offensive players, Bill. We have on the shoulda list George Springer, Marcelo Ozuna, and Tommy La Stella. Now, I know that Springer's off the list now. He's obviously signed with Toronto, and that is great for them. I'm actually really happy for Toronto. I think he fits in great with them. And I personally wasn't super high on Springer because of what happened with the cheating scandal. But I also recognize where we had our biggest hole, how he was essentially the best player on the market. And, if he was willing to play right field for us, man, that lineup would have looked really, really filthy every day. I mean, you essentially have to bump Eloy Jimenez and Yasmani Grandal to 5 and 6 to fit him in, batting 3 or 4 with Jose Abreu. It would have been unfair. Obviously, that's not a possibility. But the other two, Marcelo Ozuna and Tommy La Stella, who I think would make the perfect utility fit on our team. I mean, truly. And would give us the flexibility to trade Danny Mendick. I think those two guys are the shouldas on the list. And I still hope we go after Ozuna because I think his bat would fit perfectly in our lineup, and he would give a nice flex option from the DH to spell Eloy Jimenez from the outfield from time to time.
Absolutely. 18 homers, 56 RBIs, 338 average.
Stats.
He's going to want to, I think he's going to want a multi-year deal. And I think that's if the Sox,
at 30 years old, I say, give it to him. Bring him in for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And he's not playing into his 40s. I mean, Marcelo Ozuna could play into his mid-30s.
He's worth the money. I think if you can sign him for a 3 to 4 year deal, maybe I don't know, $20 million a year, I think that would be good. I think with the Braves, he signed an $18 million 1 year deal.
Can't be worse than Edwin Encarnacion.
I know. Yeah, absolutely. Give him
$12 million to be the worst player on the team.
He only helps the lineup, and I think if they invested in that, it would be good for us. Absolutely. If we don't try to get another pitcher, if we're going to sign another pitcher, which I think should be the priority, if we don't do that, we should get Ozuna.
Agreed, 110%. The coulda's, I'm not big. Obviously, we have Michael Brantley on the list, and he's just re-signed with Houston. We also have Nelson Cruz. We could bring in Nelson Cruz, and boy, would it feel good to pull him out of Minnesota's hands. I got to be honest with you. His age is, he's not Tom Brady, who, by the way, won again today as of this taping. But, I don't foresee the value of, if we're going to give $20 million to Nelson Cruz for a year, who's literally a decade older than Marcelo Ozuna, you might as well give it to Ozuna. But the point is the White Sox have the money to get him. And I know that there's a lot of speculation as to who's going to come in to be the DH, which brings us to the woulda part. Who will the White Sox get? I mean, at the end of the day, it's probably going to be, you know, Jock Peterson or Jackie Bradley Jr. And neither of those, you know, in fact, I would argue that both of those guys are a deficit in the lineup.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think Jock, I think the White Sox have been talking about Jock Peterson, or the rumor mill for the White Sox has been talking about Jock Peterson. Yeah, it's just kind of getting old. And the guy, he's a good ball player. Anybody in the MLB to make it there is a good ball player for sure. But I just don't think he fits with the White Sox.
Well, he's a Zach Collins. He's the exact same. He's a lefty who only can hit for power and does not know how to slap the ball the opposite direction and is going to strike out 150 times a year. That's just gonna happen. Yeah.
And I think if you want to go for a guy like Cruz, right? Give him a 1 year deal for however much money.
I'm mediocre. I'm lukewarm on that idea. I know a lot of people are excited about it, but I'd rather have Ozuna. In fact, I'd rather have Andrew Vaughn. I'd rather let the kid fail at first and get his at bats in, because we know how good of a hitter he can be. Then spend $20 million on the guy who's, you know, in his 40s and picked the wrong team 3 years ago. Sorry, Nelson. That brings us to who they shan't, but probably will anyway. Our choices were Jackie Bradley Jr. and Jock Peterson. Please don't, if you're listening, Rickon, please do not bring them in. Now we talked about the importance of Hendricks coming in, and obviously Branham and Kirby Yates are off the list. But you had mentioned to me, Bill, that you thought there was a potential for the White Sox to add a little bullpen depth. Do you still feel that way? Is there anybody on the market that you're eyeing?
I honestly think they should bring back Colome. I think that would be a good move. I think you don't want to platoon the closer role, because that you lose confidence in that, and it offers kind of a stable back to your bullpen. But I think that bringing in Colome to open it up for the Southside Slider to do his business, I think that would be a good move.
So you keep eight slots for your bullpen. Who's the odd man out? Because you have Hendricks, Bummer, Hoyer, Foster, Marshall, Fry, Cordero, and who am I forgetting? I know I'm forgetting somebody.
You got. Zach Purdy. It all depends on who's there after spring training.
No, I was thinking of Jimmy Lambert, who, by the way, in his obviously very short stint for the White Sox last year, very, very impressive. So hold on. So it's Hendricks, Bummer, Hoyer, Foster, Marshall. Oh, Crochet! Garrett Crochet! So you have your eight guys. It's essentially, Fry and Cordero are the two odd men out there, I would assume. Maybe Matt Foster, who was awesome last year. I don't know why you'd get rid of him.
I don't think they should.
Who does Colome bump Cordero?
I think, yeah, either one of the two people that you just said.
Because Fry just signed a deal. The White Sox brought him back intentionally. I guess Cordero is technically the odd man out in that situation. If you ask me who I'd rather have, Colome or Cordero, I'd probably say Colome. I agreed. But
I mean, I also
look Cordero, at too. I think Mr. Shirt, the guns man, deserves it.
His sleeves are so short.
He was overused. Crazy.
By yeah. He was. I think they really exhausted his arm. But I do think, if you look at your starting pitching staff, Lopez is going to go somewhere too.
Yeah.
And if they bring in another pitcher, one of those guys is going to go somewhere too.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of trade opportunities here. And I think if you put one of these relievers in as a cherry on top to something to bring in another outfielder, it might be a good option. But I think that bringing Colome back to the White Sox would be a good move. The fans love him. He's a solid, solid pitcher. He's always been a solid pitcher, even when he was with Tampa.
Agreed.
I think right now, the Phillies.
If he's okay with being a setup man and taking a pay cut, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I mean, he won't cost as much as Hendricks. He won't be as nearly as much as Hendricks, because I think there are times where I think we overpaid for Hendricks. But I think Colum A wants to be a part of a winning team. And if you have a solid pitcher like him who wants to be a part of the White Sox, because they've been in communication with him for 3 weeks, if you have the guy that wants to be a part of the team like Hendricks does, why not bring him in?
Agreed. So, perfect situation. I would love that. You know, we'll keep dreaming for sure. Yeah. Well, listen, let's move on to our next little bit of news. The White Sox were pretty underrepresented in Baseball America's top 100 prospects this year, if you ask me. For those of you who don't know, Andrew Vaughn was dropped to 21. Kopech dropped to 24. Nick Madrigal came in at number 40. I don't understand how that happened. And Garrett Crochet is number 74 somehow. Even worse, Jared Kelly didn't even make the top 100. Meanwhile, other players who are significantly less talented than these guys are pretty high up on the list. And, you know, I have to say, I think that someone at Baseball America hates the White Sox.
I think you're right. I think it sucks. It's so weird that a year ago they were all so far up the list and they've dropped over 20 something, or majority of them dropped over 20, right?
Yeah. Well, let's start with Jared Kelly not being on the list. So players they have above Jared Kelly: Mick Abel, maybe. Matt Allen, no. Jackson Coar, no. Are you kidding me? Trevor Rogers, no way. And I'm supposed to believe that Ryan Weathers is supposed to be a better prospect than Jared Kelly? Come on, man. Do these people watch baseball? It's ridiculous. And then Garrett Crochet at 74. I mean, the kid had essentially a perfect stat line in seven innings pitched this year, and you put him in the bottom of the top 100. I mean, here's who they have at the top, by the way, for pitchers. Sixto Sanchez, okay, he's great. I like him. Ian Anderson, okay, he proved himself. But, you know, Mackenzie Gore hasn't played above double-A ball yet. And then Nate Pearson is better than Garrett Crochet. I like Nate Pearson a lot. I don't agree with that. Tarik Skubal? Are you kidding me? At 20? I mean, this is ridiculous. Luis Patino? Come on, man. Above Kopech? I don't get it, Bill. What is it that the White Sox have had to face that have made, you know, Keith Law and all of these minor league adjudicators give the White Sox such a raw deal? They had the number 2 farm system in baseball 2 years ago. Last year they were number 12 or 11. What are they now, like 30? I mean, none of the players have changed. What's going on?
You know, I think it's they're watching them in the MLB. And yeah, Garrett Crochet did awesome. Madrigal did awesome. Injuries hurt them. Michael didn't play. Andrew Vaughn wasn't there, obviously. But I think the cool thing about this list, even though they dropped that far, 3 of those guys aren't going to be on that list, maybe 4, after next season.
Yeah.
They're going to, because they're coming up to the big leagues.
Well, Crochet isn't either. I have a feeling Crochet is going to be a big team player this year.
I think he's going to be great. I mean, watching his stuff, had he not gotten injured, might have saved us. Right. You know, so I think those type of factors come into play. You watch them, they got injured. Maybe they're watching the team as a whole, not the individual player. But I think that if Andrew Vaughn stays down, he'll move up. Jared Kelly will be on the list. And those Michael, Nick, and Garrett, they'll be off the list. Not because they're bad prospects, but because they're big time major leaguers.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just think, first of all, Andrew Vaughn as a hitter, is he worse than Wander Franco? Sure. Is he worse than Adley Rutschman? Okay, maybe. But putting him under Julio Rodriguez, under Jared Kalanick, Spencer Torkelson, I just don't know. I don't understand how he's not in the top 5. Andrew Vaughn is such an amazing hitter. He's certainly better than, you know, Dylan Carlson. He's certainly better than CJ Abrams, you know, Marco Luciano, Joe Adell, Ke'Bryan Hayes. All of them are above Vaughn on this list. And they're all above Nick Madrigal, who was the best contact rate hitter in baseball last year. I don't understand this list. And then, you know, Kopech with the injury, I guess I understand. But again, they have all these pitchers above him, I just don't agree with it. And, you know, hopefully the reason I wanted to talk about it is I wanted to bring attention to it. The Sox fans need to be watching, you know, how these minor league adjudicators, you know, judge farm systems these days. It's just such a matter of hot and cold. What have you done for me lately? It has nothing to do with the actual prospect capital. But while we're on the subject, we also wanted to touch base a little bit about international signing pool and draft strategy. The White Sox brought in Yoelki Cespedes, the younger half-brother of famous New York Met of the same name, who obviously is known for being a five-tool player, and his younger brother, Yoelki, is projected as the number one international prospect from this draft class. The White Sox just got him. They also brought in Jorge Vera, who throws real hard. Very excited about that. But there's been some speculation, Bill, that, you know, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about. The White Sox have a little bit of a track record of drafting and signing players who are college pro-am stars, you know, 18 plus, and typically play a pitching position or a corner infield, a corner outfield. Whereas if you look at players who are being traded a lot this offseason from the Padres and from the Yankees, these are young prep position players who play center field and shortstop who are under 18, players like a little famous shortstop known as Fernando Tatis Jr., who the White Sox infamously traded for James Shields, arguably the worst trade in the history of the franchise. You know, the White Sox, Bill, I just wanted to take a second to vocalize the White Sox need to change their strategy. They need to put more effort into developing young, unproven talent that projects high because their value on the trade market is significantly higher than these, you know, like, look what happened with what's his name from Vanderbilt, the starting pitcher who we drafted. Oh my God, why am I blanking on his name? Bill, help me. You know what I'm talking about?
I for some reason I'm thinking the same way you are. I just God,
who's Carson Fulmer. Carson Fulmer.
Carson Fulmer. Oh yeah, yeah. Of
we,
course.
We took him with like the seventh or eighth pick in the draft that year. He was like the fifth or something, and, you know, he's supposed to be like the big future of the White Sox. Well, I mean, what a bust that was. Sure,
the biggest bust.
He was a dominant pitcher at college, but I mean, look at what other teams are doing around us while stuff like that happens. And obviously Tim Anderson worked out, but you know, like Carlos Rodon really didn't. And if you look at, you know, Gordon Beckham going back, who the White Sox have picked,
Dion Vicieto, remember him?
Dion Vicieto, players who the White Sox, you know, were eyeing as like these, you know, they're more sure because they're a little bit older. They almost never pan out. And the value, okay, all this to say, Bill, the White Sox, they need to put a little more energy into bringing in young prep talent that they can foster long-term rather than trying to solve issues on short-term quickly, because it almost never pans out.
I think in the last 3 years, they've been trying to do that.
It's gotten better.
Let me just... Madrigal
and Vaughn are major steps forward.
They are, and absolutely so. And they, we have those guys.
Has to do with draft position.
Absolutely, but let's talk about Yoelki, right? Cespedes. So yeah, he was 19 when he started playing for Cuba. Mm-hmm. He has played 4 years now. He's 23. The guy knows how to play baseball. I mean, you could just see it in his highlights. He's superb, and he wants to be part of the Sox. Mm-hmm. He has already proven himself as a player. And I think the White Sox got very lucky when Marco Patti, who's the international scout, saw him, mm-hmm, and was like, we need to bring this guy in because he is ready. And I think that was a factor in why they're signing Adam Eaton for a one-year deal, mm-hmm, because this guy could go to the outfield and he, yeah, can play the outfield after Adam Eaton's gone.
Right.
It sucks because you look at it and you're like, okay, Lance Lynn's only here for a one-year deal. So that, what do we do with the pitching staff? But you got to separate those two. I think Vera, you know, Cespedes, and you look at Colas too. These guys, if we get Colas, obviously, I really think he wants to be with the Sox, judging by his social
media.
He's
made it very well known he wants to be with the White Sox.
Right. I think
we owe Marco Patti a huge debt of gratitude for all he's done for our international market.
Absolutely. I mean, I really think that. But I do agree with you. I think history has proven that we haven't, at least in the last decade and a half, we haven't had a great farm system that we've really built, or haven't had players in the farm system that have lasted very long, especially when they come up to the majors, which is something that really, really sucks. When we gave up Chris Sale and our big players for a lot of people, that's like, that was the first step in it all. And I think we're going to see change. I think this decade's going to look, at least the first half of the decade's going to look really good.
Agreed. Yeah. And on that note, we got to start wrapping things up here, Billy, but I'd like to close out our show with a little segment we like to call the Bottom Nine. We're just going to take a second to talk about some other big news in the sports world that we think is worthwhile of addressing. It's been a crazy off season, and it's our first episode, so we have a little more ground to cover than we usually will. Typically, it'll only be a couple of subjects, but we just want to touch base on a few things. First of all, let's talk about the Chicago Bears for a second here. They were just eliminated from the playoffs a couple weeks back, and rightfully so. They did not perform up to the expectations that they had. My question for you, Bill, is now that we know Nagy and Pace are returning, what do you think is going to happen with the Bears in the future? Do you think Mitch Trubisky comes back? What's the quarterback situation?
I think he does, because it's the Bears' history. You know, it's sad because you want to root for that guy because he has glimpses of hope and success in there. But I really think they should go after Watson. I think that would be a great move.
Although Watson has made it known he wants to go to Miami or the Jets. Which surprises.
Well, that's too bad.
It's too bad.
That's too bad. But I think that Trubisky's probably going to be with us.
Agreed. I hope we re-sign Allen Robinson. If we don't, what a mistake. Just be silly. Also, really quickly, let's touch base on the Chicago Bulls, who are, quite frankly, outperforming their expectations right now. They were projected to be one of the worst teams in the league. And if, you know, five games that were very close, all within 4 points, had gone differently, they would have the best record in the East right now. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, they just got to learn how to close. They really do. And I think they're using Markkanen in a totally different way, which is so nice to see and so refreshing. So he's living up to the hype he had when the Bulls first got him. Williams turned out to be an amazing draft pick, so I think that was a good move. This is like White Sox baseball, where you're excited to see what the future holds.
Agreed. Absolutely. And I'm excited to see, you know, Coby White has really taken a big step forward. He deserved to be a starter last year. And now that Jim Boylan, whose name we shall not mention from henceforth going forward, is gone, now that, you know, he's out of the picture and Billy Donovan is here, he's being used the right way. I think Zach LaVine has really taken a huge step forward. I was kind of all gung-ho about trading him earlier in the year, and now I'm like, wow, well, if he can sustain this, then yeah, he's a star.
He's like Adam Engel. He gets better every year.
Yeah, agreed. And you know what I would really like to see happen is I'd actually like to see the White Sox move on from Wendell Carter Jr. I like him a lot.
No, you mean the Bulls?
Yeah, the Bulls. Wow. Sorry. Freudian slip. Very, very intentional. Yeah. Wendell Carter Jr. is a great young big man, but he doesn't fit our scheme. He doesn't fit well next to Markkanen, who I like better, and obviously he's really coming around this year too. And between Markkanen, LaVine, and Coby White, it doesn't really matter who plays a small forward, so long as it fits the scheme. We just need a big man who can actually dominate down low, and Wendell Carter Jr. was kind of drafted to be a do-all center, and he really isn't doing much of anything. So he's kind of who I hope is the odd man out for the Bulls.
I think Markkanen might be out after this season. So,
and you know what? I'd be okay
if they can bring him back, then great.
You know, I think the question is how much money does he want? But if he continues to play like he has been, he's making a real argument to stay. NFL playoffs today we had Pat Mahomes versus Josh Allen. The Chiefs sealed that deal, and Brady versus Rodgers, and Tom Brady wrote his name into history books yet again as the GOAT for sure. And our Super Bowl is going to be Chiefs versus Bucks. Who you got, Bill?
I think Tom Brady's going to do it. I think Tom Brady's going to do it.
All right. You and I disagree there. I do think that Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs are just a little too dominant offensively for that Bucks defense to stop. But I will say, if there's a matchup that is going to be a bit of a shootout, the Bucks have as good of a chance as any to go punch for punch with the Chiefs. That offense looks really good. Yeah. I also wanted to say really quickly about both the Bills and the Browns. they really redefined their legacy this offseason, I think, regardless of how it turned out. I was rooting for the Bills today. I wanted them to – I always like an underdog story, and, you know, the Chiefs just won last year. They didn't need to win again. But, you know, I think regardless of how it turned out, both the Bills and the Browns should be really proud of how far they've come, and their future looks bright. And I'm also really excited, Bill, about Sarah Thomas, the first woman to officiate a Super Bowl in 2 weeks. That's huge news. Really excited about that.
That's incredibly important, and I think it continues. I hope it continues.
It does. And it fades across to baseball as well. One of the things we are both really excited about is former White Sox intern Kim Ng is named the Marlins GM, and she just participated in the inaugural ceremonies, which were beautiful, by the way. It's so wonderful to see all these young women and all these different roles really making a splash across the sports world.
Absolutely. I mean, you look at what the Dodgers have become. That's partly because of her. You look at when the Yankees won their World Series. That's because of her. All because of her, obviously. But
she was there. She was there,
and she has an amazing impact. And she knows more about baseball than I think a majority of people that work in baseball.
Agreed. I hope that Deshaun Watson does come to the Bears. Houston really screwed the pooch with Watson and Watt this offseason and regular season. So we'll see what ends up with them. I'd like to see Watson come here. I'd also like to see J.J. Watt come here, who loves Chicago, by the way.
He's a big Bears fan.
That plays out. Well, he went to Wisconsin. He loves Portillo's. Makes that very well known. The Harden trade to the Nets, that was a huge deal. God, a lot has happened in the last couple of weeks here, Bill. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to wrap this up, but I got to mention really quick, the Nets, they have a little bit of an uphill climb because they started out of the gates a little slow and all the drama with Kyrie, but that team looks pretty dominant. I also want to take a second to give some quick respect to Delonte West, who recently entered rehab. Big ups to my man. Get well soon. Glad to see that the world is helping take care of him. And a really little last little closing note that I think is important to mention. Really glad that the Mets just outright fired Jared Porter for those. The dude sent 62 unanswered text messages to a reporter who was female, including two shots of his dick. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. It's not good. That's not good. Dude, I think he was with the Cubs at that time.
Oh man, if it was like, you know, even like 8 to 10 texts, I would have been like, okay, dude, get the hint. But 62 texts, come on, man. Good on the Mets. But
good on the Mets for that organization. It's a no bullshit rule there. So they're good on them for firing.
I'll tell you what, the Mets are building a lot of really good momentum in their clubhouse right now. Really quickly, just want to close on this note. A couple of weeks ago, there was a pretty terrible insurrection at the Capitol of the United States recently, where a bunch of really horrible people tried to uproot the results of a free and fair election here in our country. And we felt it was an obligation as citizens of the United States of America who believe in democracy and the will of the people to be upheld, to voice that we stand in support of the politicians who are holding these criminals, these insurrectionists, these domestic terrorists accountable. And we certainly hope that this ends an era of division in our country. We think regardless of where you stand on the political spectrum, we would certainly hope that everyone can agree that the behavior that day was abhorrent and unacceptable. And I speak on behalf of both Bill and I when I say that we are both very hopeful that now the future looks a little bit brighter because that past is behind us. And it appears that the people who were involved are all going to face some pretty serious trouble. But we felt it was important to say, given the time and the climate, that we stand in support of democracy and not the people who tried to overturn it. Anyway, that'll do it for our first inaugural podcast today. We are very grateful to all of you for tuning in with all of us. We're out of time. In the next episode, we're going to have a lot to cover. There's a lot still happening. The cold hot stove is finally starting to warm up. Really interested to see what the White Sox do. Bill, do you have any hopes as we go out of the podcast today about what you'd like to see the White Sox potentially do before we come back to our next session?
I want to see them bring in a starting pitcher.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. We'll cross our fingers. Maybe James Paxton, maybe even Alex Colome, who knows? I'm still my number one is Marcell Ozuna. I really think he fits our team perfectly and would love to see him slot into the lineup as a DH outfield flex. And until then, we're just going to keep our fingers crossed. This has been the first ever episode of The Big Blurt. We really are appreciative for you tuning in. I have been Bobby. This has been my main man, Bill. We love you very much. We're going to take a second to remind you to wear a mask and protect your fellow Americans. Take care of each other out there, ladies and gentlemen. Bill, send it off. Say goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody. Take care of each other. Wear a mask. Love you, White Sox.
Love you, everybody. Bye.